It's time for our news review, where we highlight some of the stories affecting the blind and partially sighted community. Join me to go through three stories that have made an impact this week. I'm very pleased to welcome partially sighted actress and stand-up comedian Georgie Morrell and host of the Afternoon Edition and musician Simon Pauly. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Now, I raised both of your performance careers there as they are relevant to our stories this week, where we'll be discussing venue accessibility and the lawsuit being brought against Apple. But we're starting our news review today with a bit of bother RNIB found themselves in last week. During National Tell a Joke Day, RNIB posted a joke on Twitter about blind people. Then there was a barrage of complaints, so RNIB deleted the tweet and apologised for posting it. Georgie, we'll come to you first. You're a comedian. Should the RNIB be using their social media platforms to make a joke about sight loss?
Yeah, sure, why not? Why shouldn't the RNIB be able to make jokes about blind people? It was by no means a joke that was punching down. It was incredibly ironic, if anything. I liked that they made a joke about something that we can all relate to who are visually impaired and blind. The joke was about knocking things over, walks into this, walks into that. But it was coming from the RNIB, a charity that represent people of visual impairment. So in that was funny. Then the actual joke is that they were taking ownership of that before sort of anyone else can, if that makes sense. By no means should they have deleted it or apologized. I appreciate sometimes things with comedy, it's subjective. There's a lot of comedians out there I don't like, so I don't watch their stuff. Now, I appreciate the RNIB is not a comedian or a comic platform. However, why can't they be? And if you don't like that joke, fine, don't have to like it. It wasn't aimed at everybody.
But
that's your offence that I think you maybe need to... Sorry, carry on.
Sorry, is there an argument to be made, and this goes out to both of you, can we see why people would have been offended by the joke and put it to RNIB that they shouldn't be posting such things?
I can see why people would take offence to that joke like they might to hundreds of jokes out there. But that's down to the individual. If you don't like that joke, then fine. You don't have to like it. I don't think the RNIB should be completely neutral and not be able to make jokes. If anything, it was quite a clever sort of marketing ploy. It gave a whole sort of other way of approaching the RNIB. It's like this charity is actually quite down to earth, quite tongue in cheek, and it gave them a slightly different identity.
I'm with Georgie on this one, I would say. I mean, I thought it was more a play on words. It's something that I would have said about myself at some point. Although I do recognise the fact that some people are at different levels or different stages of a journey. So perhaps if you've just been diagnosed with sight loss and you are facing losing your sight, you might think this is not something to be joked about. So it's one of these very subjective things, I think. But it wasn't an offensive joke, though, I don't think.
Well, the RNIB did issue an apology, as Georgie said. Alongside the deleted tweet, they posted, "We understand that there are conflicting views on this issue. We agree that generally jokes can be made in bad taste. However, among the blind and partially sighted community, lighthearted self-deprecation is often commonplace, and we wanted to reflect this. We've now deleted the tweet and we apologise. It wasn't our intention to offend or distress anyone." Now, Simon, we know you're not one to back away from your convictions. Were the RNIB correct to have deleted the tweet based on only a few complaints?
Tricky one. Well, I think it shows a degree of humility and cognizance of people's feelings on that. I think the joke itself wasn't laughing at the disability. I think laughing at someone's disability is a different thing to laughing about things that can happen along the way. So I don't know whether that was the right thing to do, because by not doing it, perhaps it would put the back up of a lot of other people, and perhaps that's a negative response. So whether it's right or wrong, you don't want that negative response.
Georgie, I'm sure you've offended a few people in your career. Is it just about the delivery? Is there a way that the RNIB could have taken part in National Tell a Joke Day without offending anyone?
No, you can't. every time that we tell a joke or we speak or we voice an opinion, somebody might be offended. That's life. That's the way that the world works. Everybody has different feelings on things. And I don't see that it's the RNIB's problem, for want of a better word, to make sure that nobody is offended in every action that they take. If we all went by that, nothing would get done. They should not have deleted the tweet. I like their statement, because in that statement, they actually defended themselves a bit there. And they should have gone that bit further and kept that up. The problem we have at the moment is when somebody is offended, they will go onto social media, they'll make a thing of it, and then whatever that thing they're offended by, we get rid of, we delete it, and that shuts down the discussion, the debate. And that's not what we should be doing. We should be talking as we are now, actually, taking it apart and saying, why were those people offended? How can we, you know, where around this, what can we learn from it? And what can those people learn from offence? And whereas offence, I don't think is the right word for this. I think it's more a dislike of the joke that they probably had. But we are in this offence culture at the moment, and people really, really want to be part of it. I don't know why at all.
It might be that offence is not the correct word, but part of the culture, as you're saying, Georgie. But the reason that the RNIB, I think, did take it down is because people specifically said that they were offended by it. Not that they disliked it, but that they were offended by it. And Simon, you were saying earlier that it wasn't a joke about blind people. Just to clarify, I know we've buried the lead a little bit here, but the joke went something along the lines of, a blind man walks into a bar, then walks into a chair, then spills a drink. Something along those lines. So people felt it was actually taking a direct shot at people with sight loss.
If I had said that about myself, you and I would have had a laugh about that. So I don't think the actual thing is offensive at all. Perhaps it's offensive for people who are in that position who think that people with sight or full sight are just insensitive and don't care. But I think sometimes we just need to grow a sense of humour.
Is it because the RNIB did it in such a public platform? Is this what the RNIB Twitter feed should be used for?
Sure, why not? Why can't the RNIB have a sense of humour and try and put that? Because it's a great thing to have on Twitter. The RNIB want to boost their profile consistently. And a good way to do that is to show you've got a sense of humour, make people laugh, and then they might follow them. And then you've got something else there. So I'm sorry for people who don't have a sense of humour that were offended by it, but there are other aspects to the RNIB to get on board with. There's absolutely no reason why they couldn't be part of National Telejoke Day, because of the risk of offending a few. And the joke was, if anything, it's actually quite, there's something quite powerful about it, that because they have ownership of it, the RNIB, as I do when I make jokes about visual impairment. I have that visual impairment. I can tell this joke, and they should be really, really proud of that. And for anybody who wants to punch down and make jokes about disability with no knowledge or experience of it, it's sort of taken that away from them. Also gotten sort of a bit past some of the misconceptions of disability and visual impairments. Like, guess what? Visually impaired people have a sense of humour too.
Georgie, earlier this year, you ran the See the Funny Side project. You were the lead in the workshops for that, where a number of blind and partially sighted people took part to effectively become stand-up comedians. They put together 5-minute routines, a lot of which were, as you're saying there, it was comedy about the experiences and the things that have happened since they have lost their sight, or if they were born with sight loss, some of the experiences that they've gone through. Did you find that that was empowering?
Oh, God, yeah. And the things that those guys were coming out with, I mean, you if you're offended by the RNIB's joke, then definitely don't go see any of them. They were wonderful. They were absolute terrors. It was great. And they did something really, really bold by taking ownership of it. And, you know, we can have a sense of humour about this. And it's a shame, again, that they did delete the tweet, because maybe someone who is coming to terms with sight loss and is struggling, they could find light and humour in it. And they've taken that away, which is a real shame. And that's exactly what the guys with See the Funny Side were doing, and other comedians out there. There's some in Edinburgh at the moment who are doing exactly that. And it's a real shame, because it's incredibly, not just therapeutic, but it gives you a bit of identity and power again when you feel like you're losing it.
I spoke to Jamie McDonald, who is one of the comedians at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival just now.
I really like him.
Oh, he's great. But his act this year, and this is his 6th year of doing shows at the festival, and this one it's based around, again, aspects of visual impairment, and one of them is about the benefits, so it's the PIP fiasco. And it's sort of raising a joke about its points for benefits, like a really bad quiz show. And I think that kind of humour, which is laughing about the situation sometimes in a convoluted way we have to approach things, actually raises awareness to people who aren't involved in sight issues. Goodness me, I hadn't even thought about that. I didn't even know that was going on. So I think it's a positive thing.
Okay, this is one of those ones that I think is going to keep going round and round the roundabout, but we want you to get involved. If you have a thought on RNIB's position on their joke, whether they should have deleted it or not, do get in touch via our social media channels at RNIB Radio on Twitter. Find us on Facebook, RNIB Connect Radio, or email radio@rnib.org.uk. Okay, on to our next story, and this one has made news all over the world, as Apple is being sued due to their website not being accessible enough. Often hailed as a champion of accessibility, Apple are under fire after a blind user in New York visited the website earlier this month but encountered multiple access barriers that denied full and equal access to the facilities, goods and services offered to the public, such as being able to browse and purchase products, make service appointments, or learn of the facilities available in Apple stores in New York, the city where he is a resident. Simon, we'll start with you. Since Apple have championed accessibility for so long, will this be seen as biting the hand that feeds?
Well, I don't know, because obviously it's America and they're known to be very litigious over there. That seems to be the way you solve things. But from a personal point of view, I must admit, I groaned when I heard this, because I think there is a place for legal action, but there's also a place for discussion, and especially this particular company who have really championed accessibility and accessibility out of the box. So I don't know. I'm not saying that the chap doesn't have a point here, but perhaps we should maybe encourage rather than just go straight in and hit with a big stick.
As you say, it is a litigious society in New York. You and I were talking about this earlier. Was there room for the chap to get in touch with Apple? We know that they listen. They've listened to Stephen Scott on his Tech Talk show before. They've tried really hard with their accessibility in the past. Has he gone straight to the litigious element and tried to make a buck, even though Apple are doing their best for the blind and partially sighted community?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the man's motives, to be honest. He might think that he's going to succeed in doing a groundbreaking decision that he's made that's going to change things, but suing them isn't going to change things. Changing things will change things. So I would have thought discussion about that, and then if that's not going to happen, it's only one person we're talking about here, aren't we? You know, so the headline can make it sound like everybody's suing Apple for this. It's one person.
The only problem is the one person can sometimes be the first domino to fall. Mm. And then people will see, depending on how successful his case is, whether or not. But again, we're falling into a territory that could be that people have genuinely had issues with this. Mm-hmm. We don't know the full story yet. It is still developing. Georgie, Apple has prided itself on including accessibility features in its products. The company has also worked with other companies and organizations in producing accessibility aids, including the RNIB. Do you think this will have an impact on Apple being a product of choice among the blind and partially sighted community?
Probably, yes. I think there will be a knock-on effect for them. When I first read the story, I couldn't help but laugh that they are a company that is so forward-thinking, so innovative. I mean, the new Apple Watch will tell you when you need to put sunscreen on. That's the sort of technology that they're developing. There's another thing that does that. It's your skin will normally tell you, but people love these watches. And this sort of oversight of the website not being accessible, I just find hilarious that somebody didn't go, we've missed a beat here. Not funny in a good way, but in a sort of, oh my God, how did they not sort this out sooner? However, yeah, one guy against a corporation like Apple, that's bold. I think it's a bit of a 0-60 move to go straight to suing. It's a discussion to have with them, see why the oversight happened and fix it.
Well, we know that Apple, with especially things like, as you're saying, Georgie, the Apple Watch, the iPhone, the iPad, Apple have been really, really aggressive almost about making their accessibility features the best on the market. Is there an argument to be made to say, why did they not do it with their main website? How is it possible that they've made such an oversight?
Oh, God knows. That's what should be happening, is there should be a discussion with the visually impaired community, a representative or a charity, with the guys at Apple, and saying, how did this happen? How can we fix it and get it done quickly? Apple have the money and the means to do this as well. So there is absolutely no excuse. Going down the suing them route, I think, is not the healthy way to go, because that's going to get them panicking. And it's also going up against Apple just seems like a mad idea anyway. It should be, let's get this fixed and let's learn from it and encourage companies like Apple to lead an example about accessibility. And I'm sorry, going back to your last question, I didn't really answer it. The knock-on effect that it could have their relationship with things like the RNIB and the visually impaired community. Yeah, it would be a problem, because if their stuff's not accessible, we ain't going to use it. So if they want to, you know, shut down that area of the market, which they definitely won't want to do because they could lose money, then they will fix this quickly.
Well, surely that's it as well, because as much as we like to think of altruism, money talks. So, you know, if this is going to reflect on their market and a section of the market negatively, then they will want to fix that. That is business. So
yeah, they are the monopoly, and they want to stay the monopoly. And also the problem, if people want to use other techs that are accessible, there ain't a lot of companies that are as innovative as Apple.
Okay, let's get back into it, shall we? So reportedly, this year's Edinburgh Fringe Festival is still only around 50% accessible. Georgie, you recently took part in a gig to support more accessibility at this world-famous event. Why is it still such a problem?
I was chatting with my mate last night, and there's a couple of things you've got to take into account with the Edinburgh Fringe. It's huge, it's not curated, and Edinburgh is one of the most inaccessible cities just because of the way it's made. A lot of the venues that do house the shows, some are listed, some you just cannot adapt. So we're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place with accessibility there. However, what can be brought in is attempts to try and see if those things can be done. Obviously, that costs money. But again, it's a marketing thing. If the venue see it as, if we make this change at the venue, that will get more people in and thus more money made in the long run. Things like audio description, BSL interpretation, captioning. I mean, captioning can be done very, very cheaply. A lot of these things, there are ways around it, as I found with the last play that I did. Approaching venues and giving them the knowledge and ways around it is sort of the best thing we can do. How it's still this way is almost a bit like Apple. It's another oversight. It's another thing that's gotten missed, probably because not enough noise has been made about it. Thankfully, yeah, I did the accessibility gala at the Pleasance in Edinburgh this month, and it was Josh Heppel who organised it, and a bit of, you know, a fuss has been made, and hopefully things will change for the next year.
Well, as Georgie points out there, Simon, should we just accept that this is as good as it gets? The festival tries to use many weird and random venues. Can we really make them all accessible?
I think that is one of the problems, adding to what Georgie was saying. A lot of the venues are very old and very inaccessible. And perhaps, you know, by the nature of even stand-up, perhaps it's a room that's rented above a pub that's never used for this sort of thing. So I think it's more, let's think, jar half full. We're 50% there. So, you know, how do we educate people and people who are putting on events to think about this? Because I think from putting on an event, Georgie's done it with captioning, but it's a lot to take on. You know, if you've ever organised a gig, there's a lot to go on there. It just has to become part of the thinking when you're organising a gig, making it accessible. But how we do that, I don't know. We have to keep on doing what we're doing. But again, I think just hitting people with a stick isn't necessarily the way to do it. You make people actually understand, you know, the market and how people are getting so much more out of it, and next year you'll have more people come back, then that works from a business point of view.
Yeah, I think there's two options that are worth considering, is making sure that there is a board of some sort that deals with access, that can have a conversation with the venues and, you know, knowledge is power, basically. Educate them, as you said, Simon, on the changes that they can make as cheaply as they can within the means of the building, and see the long-term effects. Secondly, as well, is it was just mentioned this at the gala. The Edinburgh Fringe have their main website, their main hub. It does have a guidelines of what venues need to be and do to become an Edinburgh Fringe venue. What I would say to do is to change those guidelines and just enforce them a bit more. At the moment, it says strive to be as accessible as possible. I would be firmer with that and say try harder to do all of these things as best as you can, and then go from there. Otherwise, you can't be an Edinburgh Fringe venue. And trust me, they will try those venues, because they can make a hell of a lot of money up there.
Georgie, you do live gigs, live events. I do them. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but taken out of the accessibility point of view, some things that venues get away with, I get quite surprised at, that I think are dangerous even just for able-bodied people. You think, I didn't think that was allowed anymore. You know, an access here or a blocked access or a very bad step in bad lighting or no lighting. So it's not just about accessibility. I think the pressure has to be put on generally.
Yeah, on everyone's health and safety. It needs to be reevaluated, especially in the Edinburgh venues. Some of them are an absolute death trap, whether you've got, you know, two eyes or no eyes. And yet, comedy venues are the same. Basic things, mind the step, you know, put better lighting as well. This whole sort of mood and atmosphere lighting, it's just no good.
But it's that same old thing, isn't it? Is your venue accessible? Yes, we have braille dots below the light switches, and we have signs to say that they mind your head. Now, I think if I can find a group of dots underneath a light switch, I can find the light switch. So, you know, I think people's view of what makes something accessible is something that needs to be looked at as well.
A lot of them are very, very simple changes as well. It's not going to cost a lot of money or a lot of time either. And yeah, if you approach it with a business, the business effects of the long term, then everyone's a winner.
Money talks.
Now, I understand that the Fringe itself hosts thousands upon thousands of shows, and not every single performer or director is going to do this. But Georgie, you were recently in a show called Libby's Eyes, and the audio description was actually considered at the same point of the inception of the script. Is there room for more people to do shows like this?
Absolutely. It's an option. That's what Amy, the writer, and Spencer, the director, sort of put out to the world, saying you can do this and it can be a part of the play and actually give it another dynamic and make it a better show. However, I appreciate, because I write my own work and I write solo shows, sometimes it doesn't work artistically, but maybe that's something worth playing with and a whole new sort of genre to explore within theatre. And it's also a cheap, easy way to get audio description in.
And Simon, you're a performer yourself. Is there more that performers can be doing? This goes out to you as well, of course, Georgie, to ensure that venues start trying harder to make things accessible. Would it do any good for performers to say, look, this is not an accessible place for a blind or partially sighted person or a deaf person or someone with a wheelchair? I'm not going to perform.
I think that's can be a negative way to go down, because again, money talks. I'm sorry to talk this way, but to a venue and you say, well, how many blind or partially sighted people have you had over the year? They might not even be aware of having any. So they might say, well, okay, don't come. You know, it doesn't make any difference to us. So I don't think perhaps that is the way to approach it, to be honest. I think, like Georgie says, I think there has to be a much more overall approach to this. That it's more like the Equalities Act. It's not a matter of if you can, it would be good. It's like, you need to. It's the law.
In terms like comedy gigs, one, tell the venues and the promoters, but I'm realised people will be reticent about that because spots are so precious, it is quite competitive there. And in case they do have a sort of adverse reaction to you kicking off. So yeah, I'd be sneaky about it, to be honest. I'd say, if you consider doing these things, I can get a group of visually impaired people down, sell a bunch of tickets, and we're all winning. If you just make these simple changes, I'll help improve your business.
Do you think we could do the, you know, like the Dinner in the Dark, where we turned everything round? Could we do shows like that where we make it totally inaccessible for sighted people, but for our world we can get around and it's fine, and it's just like, welcome to our world.
Yeah, taste your own medicine, it's bitter.
It would certainly be a show to remember. Okay, guys, a lot to consider there, and we want you to join the conversation and let us know your thoughts on these stories. Tweet us at RNIB Radio, contact us via Facebook, RNIB Connect Radio, or you can email radio@rnib.org.uk. Georgie, you have a gig coming up. Tell us about it.
I do indeed. I'm in at Carlisle Fringe this Friday, 10 o'clock at the Container Theatre, doing my debut 4-star show, A Poke in the Eye.
Sounds fantastic. Simon, you're on the afternoon edition every weekday at 3 o'clock. Georgie Morrell and Simon Pauly, thank you so much for joining me on the Daily Connect today.
You're very welcome. Enjoyed it.
No, pleasure. Thank you.